sure that anything is guaranteed. She keeps saying to me, no, but I'm still there. Trust me, gone.
So tomorrow, was it scheduled for tomorrow?
Good morning, members, our guests. I see some representative from DOC, the other DOC from the ministry, and the DOC who are at work before the committee. I've seen post office, the CEO is here. I assume that the PMGs, they are here. As usually, state law advisors. As a committee, we are joined by the new parliamentary legal person in the name of Ms. Charmaine van der Merwe. You are most welcome. We hope that you are going to provide us with the necessary support, which we so need. I can see those who have not specifically talked to them, like SABC and other ones, because of time and so on. Don't worry, you are also acknowledged that you are here. My apology that we were supposed to start at 9, but because of other meetings, we just came urgently, I have to attend to. But my apology to the honorable members and also our guests who are here. I normally forget the parliamentary support staff most of the time when we introduce people, which they are also key in making sure that the meetings they do sit. The first item which we were supposed to deal with is the issue of the appointment of ICAC. But I request members that maybe we start with the issue of the program, because we will need the required number in the committee to be able to deal with that. You can't deal with that item if we are not meeting the necessary requirements, as the rules so suggest that we need those numbers and so on. So I'll just ask members that maybe we deal with the issue of the program, and as soon as we meet the necessary requirement, we'll go back to the issue of the appointment of the ICASA Council and so on. Members, the program is before you. Can we get some comments and input around it? Honorable Kile.
trees from what I can see, it looks fine, except that I just wanted to ask, on the 1st of June, I suppose it is the budget vote on the GCIS that we should have there, not on DOC. The DOC's budget vote debate is on the 31st of May, so I take it that the... Can I just get carried?
As it stands now, unless it changes, that indeed you are reading it correctly. That 31st will be DOC and then the 1st will be GCIS. I think there was one program which they were saying there's a misprint or something like that. But if there are changes in terms of the budget debate dates, then we'll also keep everyone informed.
I'm clarified, thank you, Chair. I've just received the revised one. Thank you.
I'll assume that we agree with the program as it is, which we must follow until the end of the second quarter and so on. The second matter which we can deal with is the issue of the SAPO bill. I think it will help us to narrow down the issue so that we don't go wild in terms of dealing with the matter. Just to go to the issues which are still issues to be resolved. My collection is that last time when we met, the issues which we're supposed to focus at. Before I proceed, I must also pass the apology. Honorable Michael, Natasha Michael, she's supposed to be here around half past nine or so because of the issue of the flight. She said she missed the 6 o'clock one, then she should go on the 7 o'clock one. She should be here at any time and so on. I just forgot before I started. I've also noted that there are apologies from Mr. Kekane. Honorable Murutua, she's still not well. She's recovering from her illness. Ndabeni, she's overseas the week of the committee for some youth project which is linked to HIV/AIDS. Tsebe, she's not well. Van der Berg is not well. He's also recovering from his operation. Now the problem seems to be the committee of not well people. Most of our members of the committee are not well. So maybe that's why you also got the challenge of the number of members to be here. But I think we'll follow through those members who are not well and see how far are they recovering. I've been speaking to Nikki, Honorable Van der Berg, almost twice a week. Last time I spoke to him, he was saying he's recovering very well. I've been also been speaking to Honorable Murutua. She's also recovering very well. The only person who has just entered into that fray is Honorable Zebe. I hope she will be recovering very soon because it not seems to be something serious. Kekane and Dabeni are other commitments and I think linked to business. So I just wanted to pass that before we proceed with the issue of presentation of the team. Those who are sick, we wish them speedy recovery so that they can come back to do their work because we miss them in the committee. The issue which I was beginning to deal with was the issue of the bill to request that the OC in your presentation, if you can just focus on the areas where are still sticky points. But the area, as far as you remember, is that there is the issue of removing the concurrence with the Minister of Finance. That's one issue. The second issue was around the issue of the procedure to appoint the board members, where the ANC suggested that we must remove must to be made so that the minister, where he so wishes, can appoint directly, but where he feels he can also appoint a committee to assist him in terms of that process, then he deal with the final product and so on. So the other issue which came up, I'm sure it was accepted by the committee, the one of reinstating what is contained in the white paper about the rights of the union in terms of appointing board members, that was accepted and so on. So the two sticky areas, the issue of the appointment of the committee and issue of the concurrence and so on. Last time we discussed the matter, I requested the parties to go back and relook on this concurrence, whether are the concurrences which really require that there should be concurrences and so on. I hope members, they went through even the white paper during their time of looking to this matter, because some of the issues are also contained in the white paper in terms of where the responsibility was put in terms of dealing with some of the issues and so on. But I think that's the issues, if I can sum it up, which were issues where we still have some difficulties and so on. So we'll have to engage on these issues as a committee, and we must be able to find each other. So that whatever we do, we continue with our work of reaching consensus and dealing with the issues in terms of voting and using the voting processes and so on. But I'll hand over to DOC to take us through those issues. But like I said, that I hope parties have gone through that. The challenge which we are having is that the bill has been with us for quite some time, and we are really, really under pressure to finish it. But welcome, Honorable Rev Zondi. I think we can go back to the issue of the report, so that we finalize the issue of the report, and then we go back to the issue of the bill. Sorry, DOC, I could see that we're getting ready, but we have just to put apply brakes. We'll deal with the issue of the report, then we'll come back to the issue of the bill and so on. Members, on the issue of the report, you remember that we undergo a process as a committee to appoint or to recommend the appointment of the ICASA councillor, where a vacant for one councillor existed with effect from the 1st of April, which means the term of the current councillor was expiring 31st of March 2011. As required by the legislation that we must give the minister 1.5, we agreed as a committee on two names, which we passed it through the House. Then they went to the minister. The names were Ms. Nomonde Bonaga and also Dr. Marcia Sotriku. The matter was forwarded to the minister to exercise his authority in appointing or recommending one of the two. And then the report has come back from the minister that he prefers that he appoint Dr. Marcia Sotriku, the current serving councillor, to continue for another second term and so on. So that is the report which is before us, which we must table before the House afternoon, so that if the House adopts that report, then that can be put into effect moving forward and so on. But yes, you know that report must first be come to the committee, so that later then it goes to the House, so that the House can finalize the report. So that is the matter which is before us, members. I can hear comments and so on before I read the report in terms of the rules. The party which I always have issues about. Honorable Rev Zondi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we endorse the Honorable Minister's choice.
Honorable Killen?
Thank you, Chairperson. It is supported.
The African National Congress.
Thanks, Chair. Let me support the preferential candidate for ICASA, that is Dr. Marcia Sotriku. So the ANC supports the name.
Thanks, honourable members. Member must then quickly go to the requirement by the rules. What you must do. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Communications on appointment of Dr. Marcia Sotriku to serve on the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, ICASA, dated 12 April 2011. The Portfolio Committee on Communication, having considered the request from the Minister of Communications for appointment of Dr. Marcia Sotriku to serve on the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, in terms of Section 5.1b of the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa's Act of 2000, number 13, as amended, and as it has been circulated on the ATC of the 8th of April 2011, recommend that the House approve the appointment of Dr. Masha Sosikwa. Agreed.
Yes, Chair, it's fine, it is agreed. I just wanted to make the specific point that notwithstanding the fact that that from our party perspective, we was hoping that we could put infused new blood into the Health Council and that we could bring about further dynamism in that specific council, which we really believe is surely needed. We accept the minister's choice. However, we will certainly place additional pressure on the Department of Communication to make sure that performance agreements with the councillors are actually signed up and that the authority can live up to the expectations of the sector, of the communication sector. Because all of us know, we've again seen in recent weeks, all of us know that we really need to beef up. Yes, there's been some improvement in ICASA, but we really need to beef up the performance of ICASA as a body, and it was for that reason that we wanted to bring in some new blood. Unfortunately, we were voted out, and we accept that, and therefore, at this point, we just wanted to make that point.
I see.
No, Chairperson, we take the sentiments of the Honourable Killian on board, but we think that continuity is critical at this point in time, and hence our support for Dr. Masha Sosikwa. And we think that the report should be presented, if possible, without any debate in the House.
Thank you, Honourable Zondi. ANZ?
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, we concur with the sentiments that they've been expressed by the ISP. And I also suggest that we hope that the report is not debated in the House, can be presented. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. But I must assure the Honourable Member, Killian, that next year in June there are three vacancies in the council. Now there's still an opportunity to do some introduction of new blood and other things and so on. And of course, I think some of the issues which Honourable Member we are raising are the issues which lie within the committee's oversight role, that we must continue to be vigilant and make sure that these institutions, which we have put to make sure that they do this regulatory work, they do what they're supposed to do. But I think it's an ongoing discussion on how do we shape the ICASA moving forward. I think there are broader issues to deal with, the structural problem, whether the current ICASA in form is what you want as a country, how to move forward. So we need a broader debate, so that we can be able to take that matter forward. But as I indicated, members, that the matter will be placed before the House today, which is sitting at 2, for processing and so on. Thanks very much, members. If we can go to the second item, maybe there are no other issues on the matter. You will see.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Perhaps by a matter of production, you made few points that were resolved in the last meeting of the PPC. But I think there's one area that Chairperson could make it now, the issue of the Companies Act. I remember the last meeting, Chairperson, the resolution that we need to go and look at areas where the Companies Act affects our bill, and that, Honorable Chair, has been done. Through your permission, we can present.
Have you done some work which you want to report on to, around the issue of the Companies Act? Okay, no, it's fine. You can do it.
Thanks, Chair. We have a presentation which is in twofold. One part is the areas that's affected by the new Companies Act, as the PCC meeting resolved last time, to say we must go do some work on that. That's been done. And the second part, Honorable Members, is the part that was presented, I think, the 12th of March 2011, take to account amendments that we are required to do. So I'm from DOC. My name is Willie Vugela. I think I'm commonly known by this committee. I would my two colleagues, Alf Wills and Pingele Dlamini. I will allow Alf to first present the first part. I can present the second part if the committee permits. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Members. So my focus is how the new Companies Act of 2008, how it would affect the South African Post Office Bill. I think this committee realized upon advice received from the State Law Advisor that there's a risk that the new Act would come into operation shortly, and I've just learned from Advocate Smut that 1 May 2010 is currently the targeted date for the commencement of the new Companies Act. It is therefore relevant and it is important to cover those issues, which we try to do here. Firstly, the name of the bill, if we just talk about the cover page of the bill, there's a requirement in the New Companies Act that says that the expression SOC LTD must now be added to all names of state-owned companies. So SOC being the abbreviation for state-owned company. So if we talk about the name of our bill, it should therefore read South African Post Office SOC LTD Bill. We'll take you through a number of related amendments. In the definition of the Companies Act, we now refer to the New Companies Act. Secondly, the definition of post office, we then include SOC LTD, again, as part of the name of the post office. Clause 2 was amended, again, to omit limited and to substitute SOC LTD, so 2 subsection A then says the objects of this act are to provide for the continued existence of the South African Post Office SOC LTD. The same name change was done in Clause 3. Clause 3 was further amended to replace references to articles of association with references to memo of incorporation. So the new Companies Act has done away with the traditional memorandum and articles of association and now simply refers to a memo of incorporation. So we've tried to replace that everywhere in the SOPO bill. For example, in Section 34A, it would now refer to memo of incorporation. And the same to Clause 3.5. Going to Clause 27. Clause 27.2 was amended by omitting the word A provision and substituting it with the words notwithstanding sections 5, 4, and 9 of the Companies Act, A provision. Now, this amendment, Honourable Chair, was necessary to clarify that the SOPO SOC Limited Act will prevail in the case of conflict between the Companies Act and our bill. The wording, therefore, of 27.2 reads, notwithstanding Section 5, 4, and 9 of the Companies Act, a provision of the Companies Act does not apply to the Post Office in circumstances were, and it continues from there. Clause 28, 1A was amended by omitting the words the, or the word the, and substituting it with the words notwithstanding Section 9 of the Companies Act. This amendment, Chair, is necessary to create an exemption procedure. The application of Section 9 of the Companies Act must be excluded to ensure that the procedure in Clause 28 of the Bill can be followed to declare certain provisions of the Companies Act inapplicable to the Post Office. In essence, our Clause 28 and Section 9 of the Companies Act contain certain repetitions, and both can't exist at the same time. So it's necessary to ensure that ours will prevail, because we believe our clause in 28 is better than Section 9 of the New Companies Act. The references in Clause 28 to Registrar of Companies have also been replaced with references to Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, which is the new name in line with the New Companies Act. 28.2a then simply reads, the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission must publish particulars about the request and the motivation contemplated in subsection 1 by notice in the Gazette. And 28.2b has similarly been changed to refer to Commission. Again, Chair, the New Companies Act necessitated an amendment to Clause 32, the short title, which reads, this act is called the South African Post Office SOC Limited Act 2011 and takes effect on a day determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. Chair, if you'll permit, Schedule 2, again, the definition of postal company was amended to include the new company name with the wording SOC LTD. The words member of association were replaced with member of incorporation, and Section 3.5 of the Post Office Act of 58 has been deleted in the schedule to remove the following provision. It's the old provision that requires public companies, that provides that public companies may not have fewer than 7 members. So there was a special provision in the Old Companies Act that's not required anymore, because the New Companies Act doesn't have the same requirement anymore. So just to repeat that, the amendment was necessary since the requirement in the Companies Act that a public company must have at least 7 members have fallen away in the New Companies Act. In the memo, Chair, we don't usually deal with the memo, but just a quick scan through that. Again, the heading of the memo was changed to include SOC LTD. Paragraph 3.1 of the memo amended to include SOC LTD. Paragraph 4.31 of the memo, a clarifying note was inserted. We've been advised by the State Law Advisor that it is necessary to just clarify why the name of this bill is changed or has changed from the name introduced to the current name that we propose. So there's just new wording added to state the bill was introduced as the South African Post Office Bill, but the name was changed by the Portfolio Committee on Communications to South African Post Office SOC Limited Bill. That's all from me. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much for the presentation of the impact of the New Companies Act to the bill which you are currently dealing with. I'm not sure. Welcome, Honorable Michael, and also the chairperson of FAPO.
Thank you.
We try to consult the legal people in Parliament on how best can we deal with this matter. Because we seem to be in a dilemma. A new act will be coming in, what is with the bill, which that legislation will have the impact on it. questions, let us proceed to finalize the bid. Maybe the issue of the impact of the Newcomers Act is something we must go back into after we finalize the bid, as we've been dealing with. The other reason was we're told that we are not sure when exactly the act will come into effect. One May, it was 1 April, it can be May, it can be December. And if we are going to follow and track when it's going to come in, it might delay the finalization of the bid. We'll have the bid with us for a longer time. But what we must do is to continue finalizing the bid. And then if it happens by the time we finalize it, the act is already in, then we can engage with that matter at that time. But not to start now to constrain ourselves in looking to the issues of the bill because of the new legislation which is coming. So that's the advice which came from them. But taking note of what the state or advisor said in terms of being mindful of the Incumbents Act, which I think there is no contradiction. All what we can do, maybe outside just members, that we took the impact as it is presented of the new Incumbents Act, so that we go through them, we understand them, but on the same time we proceed to finalize our issues. And then it will depend whether in May, because anyway the likelihood is that we are not sure when we are going to finalize the bill ourselves. It is depending on the discussion within the committee. So we'll come back to those issues. You know. So that's the advice which came from the parliamentary legal people to say we might be holding a parliament in ransom. By trying to link our action to the actions outside which are supposed to unfold and put that particular bill into practice or to become a legislation and so on. But members, it's open for discussion. Let us advise us if you've got a different issue around that, you can also raise the issues. But remember, that's the issue which we have got from parliamentary people around the issue how to move forward. Honorable Zondi Makar,
thank you, Chairperson. I think the advice is sensible, but we must also thank the Department for being proactive in taking into consideration what the passage of the new Act. But for practical purposes, I think we must be pragmatic as our advisors are advising us. But the issue that I wanted to raise, Chairperson, the last time I was in the committee when we were dealing with this piece of legislation, there was the issue of Section 22A, which was raised by representatives of the SA Post Office Management. I do not know if that issue has been finalized amicably, which refers to an employee is appointed by the CEO, subject to terms and conditions and within the financial limits determined in accordance with a human resource policy approved by the minister after consultation with the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Public Service and Administration. I would be happy if that issue could be addressed by the department.
Thank you, Nonda. Honorable
Makar. Thanks, Chair. Mine, Chair, I just want to get it clarity from what you are saying, if I understand you well. You are saying, Chair, the DOC, they've presented the bill with the new changes that come from the Companies Act legislation. And as a committee, we've already embarked on the post office bill. So you are saying, let's continue with what we were continuing with. But bear in mind that there are these new changes that we have received from the new bill, which is the Companies Act bill. That's where I want a clarity, Chair. And the question, and I've heard you, the legal advice that you have you have received. And the question for me, when are we going to incorporate what we have received now? When are we going to start to, you know, to incorporate that? Thanks, Chair. Because I'm also looking at the time frame we've been dealing with this bill. I think the time frame that we put for the bill, that time it has elapsed, and I think we're running behind. So I just need, you know.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hear what Reverend Zondi has said about the other issues, about staff, etc. But I just thought maybe we should just deal with the issue of the New Companies Act first, and then we can go back to the other outstanding matters that you've also listed. So, from what I understood from the presentation, was that in most cases it is to comply with the new prescriptions of the New Companies Act. And therefore the issue of the state-owned company, etc., is basically just to comply with what the Act describes for a state-owned company. My concern, Chairperson, goes back to Section 27 and 28, specifically. And it is, again, that we're having a new Companies Act with a clear focus on what is expected of state-owned companies, yet we are busy to now pass a law where we give the right to declare specific provisions of this new Act, Companies Act, inapplicable to the post office. And in both those sections, this is exactly what we're doing. We're saying, notwithstanding the Companies Act, the post office as a state-owned company is some other special animal that deserves special provisions. And we just need to have clarity about this blanket right that we are giving to declare certain sections inapplicable and inappropriate. What are we essentially doing to an act that was passed by Parliament to regulate also state-owned companies? And therefore, I would like to ask Mr. Wills if he would specifically go into the details of what is it, what is this blanket right that we are allocating as a committee? And is it good legislation that we are going to pass if we do that? Legislation, Chairperson, is always a tension between what a department wants at best and what we believe as a parliament, which is going to result in good governance. And I really believe that we have a responsibility as members of this committee to make sure what we are saying, and not just to pass over to say, yes, it's fine, we can just declare it inappropriate or inapplicable. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. I'm sure the DOC will clarify the issues. But I think the issue which I was trying to clarify was that when last time we attempted to deal with the bill, we raised the issue that anyway, on the 1st of April, a new Companies Act is coming into effect. Maybe we must wait for that so that we know what things are going to change on the legislation. Unfortunately, that has not happened. Now it will seem the indication is that it will be around May. Now, when we're seeking the advice from the Parliament's legal people, they then said, that's your problem because you are trying to deal with processes outside of Parliament instead of focusing to your business, which is at hand. Because you see the issue of assenting the bill is there with the President. It's not in Parliament. Parliament has played its part. Now the process is outside of Parliament when the President will sign and the other thing. So which they said, no, it's a good thing that you've got your eye into that, but don't frustrate your processes of finalizing your bill because that has not happened. Delink the two things. Run your course. If that happens, at that time it's when you deal with the consequences of that. So that's the advice we've given, because what it means is that if we follow that, that Newcomers Act has not been it not came to be a law, it means we must wait until that happens. If towards the end of May they decide that no, they shift it to September, the consideration, or it means we'll have to wait until. So their advice was that let us separate the issues. It's good that we know that the Companies Act will be coming in soon, which we also commend the department to clarify us which clauses will be affected by that. But as a committee, we must continue handling the bill before us and finalize it. So that's the issue which they were talking about and so on. But I agree with your approach that maybe they can finalize the issue of the impact of the Newcomers Act, then deal with some of the issues the Honorable Rev Zond has raised in terms of 22A and so on. But that one clarified the first part, that the advice is that let us not be hamstrung, that is going to come in. That's why my proposal was that we appreciate the work done by the department. Let us take that and take it and go and deal with the issues which are at hand for the bill. Then we'll come back to those, including your clarities, which you are raising, because at that point, it will be a legislation. Current is not a legislation, still waiting for the president. The president might decide to subject it to constitutional court and other things, or he might refer back to parliament if not satisfied. So there's a lot of number of things the president might decide to do, not to sign that the bill into law and so on. So that's the issue. But I'm sure I've tried to clarify that part. That's what the issue I was dealing with. I've seen Honorable Michael Lohan was up. Okay, it's fine. So, POC, can you just quickly deal with the other issues so that we can go back to this? A few about the issues is that what Honorable Killian has noted on your submission is that there are clauses, which is not a simple swap of stock. You see, you have put stock on the other things, but there you seem to say certain clauses in the Newcomers Act should not be applicable. What exactly are you talking about in those two clauses? That's the thing which, but just for clarity so that you can ask.
Thank you, Chair. Well, clause 27 and 8, I mean, first we must realize that those issues have already been debated by this Honorable Committee. Just in my view, we're just replacing the old Companies Act with a new one. I mean, clause 27 was initially about the conflict. If there's a conflict between the SAPO bill and a Companies Act, whichever one, we argued that the Post Office Bill must prevail. Why? I think it has been debated at length. The fact is, all laws don't talk to each other, and sometimes laws differ. That's the bottom line, and you try to create a clause that ensures that if there's a conflict somewhere, let's just be sure what we want to be the law at that point in time. And then clause 28 is about exemption. Again, whether the Old Companies Act or the New Companies Act, a procedure is necessary to say which, if necessary, if a need arises in future, which provisions of the Companies Act shouldn't apply to the post office for whatever reason. Now, this Honorable Committee would remember that the committee moved from a position where initially specific sections of the company's legislation were mentioned, and at some point we were asked to go through all those specific sections, and which we did and elaborated on, and sufficient debate took place about the matter. But at some point, perhaps due to the risk of us missing one particular section which we want to exempt, I think the committee went for this blanket approach. Rather create a procedure or a mechanism that's open and transparent by which certain provisions can be excluded from application. So again, I respectfully would submit that, you know,
whether all the new companies act doesn't really make a huge difference. To just state further that we must bear in mind that the Companies Act is written for thousands of companies and hundreds of SOEs. It's a generic piece of legislation trying to create a one-size-fits-all dispensation, but that's not fair, I would say, because the fact is one size does not fit all, and if we want to create something more specific for the post office, the legislature should again have the discretion to do that, and that's the discretion that this committee has. So the post office bill, just to emphasize that, is more specific. You would want perhaps a specific provision not to be applicable to the post office. And following an open and transparent process, that possibility should therefore exist for a kind of exemption. Just to give one practical example, we believe that our exemption clause, the Clause 28 procedure, is better than Section 9 of the New Companies Act. Why we say that is, for example, our clause provides for consultation, publication in the Gazette, for example. So it's open to consultation. If you go read clause Section 9 of the Companies Act, there is no public consultation. So it must say that ours is better in that sense. It also provides for the post office to specifically motivate why they require this exemption from a specific the application of a specific provision, again, which we believe is better than ours. The Section 9 of the New Companies Act is generic and a one-size-fits-all because it allows the Minister of Public Enterprises to approach the Minister of Trade and Industry to say, you know, in respect of all state-owned entities, we believe the following should apply. So there may be instances like that where you would want to exempt the whole industry, the whole SOC or SOE industry from a certain provision. But Section 9 bars the department from approaching the Minister of Trade and Industry, and it bars the post office through our minister to approach the Minister of Trade and Industry, because only the Minister of Public Enterprises can, one, two, and it must apply to all SOEs. So it makes it actually impossible to ensure that a specific provision doesn't apply to the post office. Then if I can turn to Clause 22, Chair.
This 22 will deal with when we deal with the other clauses. I just wanted to clarify the issues around the new companies exemptions. I'm sure members, what we can do is to note what the department is saying, because at one point, one way or another, we'll come back into that to deal with those issues and so on. But I must say that we appreciate the work which we've done to try to pick up what the changes will be and so on, so that we start ourselves to engage on that particular matter and so on. You see, the people who pass the Companies Act is our colleagues in trade and industry. So they were creating a framework that, if you look in terms of that bill, is more of a framework, a skeleton which needs flesh and other things to be a human being. So what you are doing, we're trying to put the flesh and the blood and the life on the skeleton to be able to start to move and exist and so on. But we come back to those issues, I suppose, in due course. I'm not sure that the circular advisors wanted to comment on the advice from the parliamentary legal session.
The department covered everything that I wanted to say, Chip.
Members, can you
go
to the issues? Which are still a sticky point in terms of the proposal of the ANC to the bill, so that we finalize those. Then we'll go to Section 22A, as raised by, Honorable Rev. I nearly said comrade, Rev. no, it's fine. DO3, can you just take us through the issues?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The next part of the presentation, as we said in the introductory remarks, it covers issues that came, as the person was saying, from the AIDS study group. Where we started, clause 3.5, we talk about the issue of memorandum association at post office. 3.5B, the amendment that suggests that the grant of removal of the concurrent of the Minister of Finance, which goes to further to 3.5C, which says, shall not issue any shares except as approved by the Minister with the concurrent of the Minister of Finance. On clause 8, which is government support to post office and loans by post office subsidiaries, clause 8.3, the payment for service support subject to the profit made by Parliament and must, for that purpose and period and subject to such conditions as the Minister may determine. The amendment thereof is with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. Clause 8.4a, which further says the post office and its subsidiaries may not borrow money without the prior written approval of the Minister, with the removal of the Minister of Finance. Honorable Chair, Clause 18, which is the conditions of appointment of the CEO, CFO, and COO. Clause 18.5, the CEO, COO, and CFO are entitled to remuneration package determined by the board with the concurrence of the Minister, removal, and Minister of Finance. Clause 22, which talk about personnel of the post office. I hope it covers Honorable Zondi's question. Clause 22.1a, the board must determine the structure of organization of the post office and condition of service, remuneration, and service benefits of personnel of the post office after consultation with Chief Executive Officer and Congress of the Minister. The wording and the Minister of Finance was removed at the end of Clause 22.1a. On Clause 22.3, which is the new clause of subsidiaries and accountability, Clause 23.3a, the post office must, before it establish a subsidiary or revive a dominant subsidiary, submit a feasibility study and business plan of the proposed subsidiary to the Minister for consideration. Which bids the Minister may subject to Section 511G of the PFMA after consideration of the feasibility study and business plan approve the establishment of the subsidiary or revival of the dominant subsidiary, as the case may be. The wording and the Minister of Finance was removed in both paragraphs A and B of the clauses above. Clause 12, appointment of non-existent members of the board. This clause has been amended to give the Minister a discretion to appoint a nomination committee. I think this is the area that Honorable Chair was talking about. The amendment further introduced the role of the tribunals in the nomination of non-existent members of the board. The amendment further ensures that at least 1.5 times the number of the board members are nominated. Clause 12.1, for the purpose of appointing the non-existent members of the board, the Minister must A, by notice at least 2 newspapers and in the Gazette invited persons, and B, in writing invited unions organized by the post office to submit within the period and in the manner mentioned in the notice the names of persons fit to be appointed as members of the board, with due regard to Section 9, Sub 5. Clause 12.2, the Minister may appoint the nomination committee to make recommendations to the Minister for the appointment of the non-existent members of the board, considering subsection 1A, with the removal of must give discretion to the Minister to appoint that committee. Clause 12.3, if the nomination committee is established, use that discretion. The Minister must ensure that the committee is representative of the various social groups and geographic areas of the Republic and that both males and females are represented. The Minister, if applicable, and if applicable, the nomination committee in making recommendations to the Minister must consider Clause 12.5, the Minister must ensure that the non-existent members of the board represent a sufficient spread of skills, knowledge, qualifications, and experience to enable the post office to function efficiently and effectively. Clause 12.6a, nominations of several persons as contrary in Section 4 must include at least 1.5 times the number of the board members to be appointed. be if a sole person or the required number of the several persons are not nominated, as covered in Section 1, B, and 4, the minister may call for further nominations in the manner set out in Subsection 1. 7A, the minister must appoint 1, 2 non-existent members of the board from suitable persons nominated by trade unions covered in Subsection 1, B. I thank you, Honourable Chair. I thank you, members.
Members, those are the issues, but I would think that the best way of dealing with it, to deal with it religiously, it will be a problem. We must go back to the first page and deal with one issue at a time, and then we pass to the next issue. Otherwise, we open it generally, it becomes a problem. How do we manage and see how address our progress and so on? So, members, we'll just go back to clause 3.5. I think that's where...
Chairperson, yes, this is the infamous section that got me very excited last time when I completely misunderstood what had been told to me, and then very kindly the state law advisors pointed out that it meant the exact opposite to what I had understood. Chair, I'm still exceptionally concerned with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance being removed from all these clauses, and Chair, if you give me the liberty, I can't just deal with page 19 because it goes on up until page 21, no, in fact 22, the removal of the Minister of Finance. Chairperson, I think we've learned the exceptionally hard way what can happen in entities where the Minister of Finance doesn't have some kind of look over, some kind of input into these things, and let's be perfectly frank, it results in state bailouts. Chair, this is a state-owned company we're talking about here, and I'm quite sure that the executives themselves are very happy with one another helping each other out in looking at these acts and making sure that decisions that are made are in the best interest of the coffers of South Africa. Chair, I think it's actually quite ludicrous to think that the Minister of Finance would not have the... Let me put it this way. We are not saying that the Minister has to give sole approval. There will be discussion between the two ministers, and then concurrence will be given by the Minister of Finance, because the Minister of Finance knows the bigger picture when it comes to state funding. And, I mean, an issue like shares, I find it almost unacceptable to think that the Minister of Finance would not have the right to give a yay or nay as to that. Payment of financial support. I mean, this is state bailout stuff we're talking about here, Chairperson. Of course the Minister of Finance has to give concurrence for that. Post Office and its subsidiaries borrowing money. Chairperson, it's essential that the Minister of Finance has concurrence when it comes to state-owned companies borrowing money. Chief Executive Officer, Chief Financial Officer, Chief Operating Officer, remuneration packages. Of course the Minister of Finance must have concurrence in this. It is a state-owned company. Then going on to the board must determine the structure and organogram. And again, all the wording of the Minister and Finance has been removed at the end of clause 22.1a. Chair, I find it most problematic, and I think especially considering the history that we've had in communication with regards to financial disasters, for lack of a better word, I think we're treading on exceptionally dangerous territory in taking out the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, that is.
I assume that your submission, Honourable Member, will religiously talk to all the issues which got the Minister of concurrence of Minister of Finance, where it has been removed. The ANC? Honourable Killer?
Jefferson, I believe in 70 to 80% of the cases where the position of the Minister of Finance has been removed. COPE would totally disagree on the basis of promoting financial accountability and based on the issues that Honourable Michael has already raised. We know we have state-owned companies in South Africa that in a question of between 4 to 5 years have moved from well-managed companies to companies in financial distress, bailouts, etc., to the extent that some of them actually had to be referred for oversight to the Minister of Finance. Now we are removing the concurrent role of the Minister of Finance, which is really totally unthinkable. But I just wanted to say that we could possibly differentiate between operational matters and matters where we actually give a specific blanket role for the Minister of Communication to allow the post office to enter into loan agreements, to issue shares. I mean, for that matter, they could essentially just proceed and issue shares, etc., and the only at the very end when there's a financial crisis at this institution, the Minister of Finance would have to move in to say to save the institution because it is a state-owned company. So I just wanted to suggest that we perhaps move to say in which cases is it an operational matter that is dealt with once a year with a budget, where there is a specific budget voted. It's part of the appropriation bill, and that is the money that is allocated to the specific functioning of the post office, but that we then take away the other issues where we are saying the Minister of Finance has absolutely no role concurring with specific steps to enter into loan agreements, to give subsidiaries just blanket rights to do whatever they like, and the Minister of Finance is not aware of it. I think that would be really reckless of this committee if we put a stamp of approval on those suggestions. I would like to suggest, for instance, if I may be specific, Chairperson, in some cases, and we could look at the details, Section 8.3, for instance, I don't really have a problem with the ANC study group proposal there, where we're saying the payment of financial support is subject to the appropriation made by Parliament and must be for such purposes and periods and subject to such conditions as the Minister may determine. Because the clear understanding there is it's part of the national budget. It's part of appropriation in Parliament, and that would be fine. But the next section, sub 4, post office and its subsidiaries may not borrow money without the prior written approval of the Minister. Full stop. Removing the oversight role of and the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, that would really be reckless if we move in that direction. So we can move also to Section 22, and we can say, what are operational matters? It would probably be a little silly for the Minister of Finance to look at the structure of the organogram. The Minister of Finance would look, at the total cost and the profitability of the operation. But I believe we should differentiate between those issues. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thanks, Chair. Chairperson, let me start by saying, as the ANC, we will stand with the proposal that we have made as the ANC to remove the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. We will stand by that position. Chair, let's go to clause 3. And I'll be making input and also ask questions so that we understand each other. Clause 3, it talks about the memorandum of association of the post office. And B, Chair, in terms of performing that, the memorandum, do we really need the Minister of Finance to be part of this? Because if you look at the nature of that clause, this is a functional matter. It's an operational matter. The memorandum of association is something that it's between the two parties internally. It doesn't need really the authority of the Minister of Finance. The approval, do we really to bring the Minister of Finance in terms of approving whether be it shares, whatever financial liabilities does the post office is going to enter into? Because I take it that you have the executive. Within the executive, you have chief financial officer. Obviously, the chief financial officer, there's nothing that she or him can do without discussing or informing the upper structure. So do we really need the Minister of Finance to be part of this? Because I take it, I'm going back to the point that I've made. Because the Minister of Finance within the cabinet, she's part of that. And these issues, the major issues, major deals or investments are being tabled in the cabinet meeting. So the Minister of Finance, he is informed. And I do believe, Chair, that those two departments, there is a communication in between. So do we really bring, again, the Minister of Finance in this? Whereas you have a department that is being led by the Minister who has been given the mandate to run the department. And I think the Minister shares the major investments in the cabinet. On borrowing the money. And I think, Chair, also even on that, do we really want to bring the Minister of Finance? Because the Minister of Finance can be informed the intention, this is what we're intending to do and get the advice. On the remuneration of the executive. On this one, Chair, really, do we really want also to bring the Minister of Finance? Because I take it that the Minister of Minister of Communication will consult with the Minister of Finance. But I don't think that it should be something that is being legislated, because I think the memorandum of attitude, I don't know whether at the post office they use the memorandum of attitude of association, it does talk to those issues. And I think, Chair, I'll stop there. page 22, Chair. I think the board of post office, it has the responsibility to run the post office. They are the ones, they should determine, you know, how should the post office be structured, how should it be run. They have a responsibility. And I think the Act, the Post Office Act, it does give them the power. Do you really, even on that, call the Minister of Finance to have a say on that? Because what it means, Chair, in general, in other words, we are saying, we establish institutions, we put people in these institutions to run those institutions, but at the very same time, we are saying, yes, we're given, you know, these responsibilities, but we are also going to tighten up the legislation that governs your institution. In a layman's language, in other words, we are saying we don't trust that you can run this institution. So therefore, we will bring the legislation that will force you to do what we want to do. And I'm saying, Chair, I think let's look at these clauses, but we stand by what we have proposed. If you look really at those clauses, why should we want to tighten up as if we are saying people, they are not going to deliver? Because it's definitely so. If there are investments that the post office wants to enter into, there are procedures internally, and they know the shareholder will play a role in terms of deciding exactly who should, whether the post office should enter into those investments. And the post office cannot just enter into the investment without, you know, looking at what are the possibilities and what are the disadvantages. Definitely, there will be a dialogue in that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. DOC, your hands were up.
Thank you, Chair. From our perspective, it was important to ensure that the recent new proposals are not in conflict with especially the PFMA, and we therefore specifically went and tried to compare and check to make sure that everything is in order, and we feel that we should just mention some of those to give some comfort and as a mere in a clarifying role, Chair. If, for example, Chair, we look at Section 54,
if you can just.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this time around, Comrade Killian will be happy that in some instances I am closer to her and even Comrade Mike. Just to allay their fears. But I think we should strive for flexibility. The first point that we'd like to make here in concurring with Member Killian is that government departments should actually not work in silos, particularly the National Treasury via the Minister of Finance must be involved in cases where the National Fiscus could be implicated. I don't think this undermines the authority of individual ministers of state. They operate on the basis of budgets that are allocated by Parliament, but at the same time, issues that arise in the running of entities that are entrusted under their authority should not go beyond the provisions of the national budget without that minister giving actual concrete legislation to ensure that at least he or she gives a note that he or she is satisfied that everything is actually within the framework, the financial framework that has been agreed to. The issue of flexibility, for example, would operate insofar as that clause 22A is concerned, because in operational matters, we do not think that we should tie down the Minister of Communication to have to consult with the Minister of Finance, even where the issues I've referred to may not arise. I just wanted to ask the department if, with this, the removal of the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, on page 45 of the bill, there is listed there under five parties consultant, one of them being the National Treasury. This removal of with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, has National Treasury been consulted, and does it agree? Thanks, Chair.
See,
what's
this?
Thanks, Chair. Just to repeat, so we wanted to ensure that there's no conflict between the new proposals and the PFMA, and we want to now assist where we can, just to put everyone at comfort. Section 54.2 of the PFMA, for example, deals with a number of the issues that are relevant here. It says, before a public entity concludes any of the following transactions, the accounting authority for the public entity must promptly and in writing inform the relevant treasury of the transaction. So just note there, again, immediately post office must inform treasury of this transaction. And submit relevant particulars of the transaction to the executive authority for approval of the transaction. You're referring to the Minister of Communications. So in involve treasury and get approval from the Minister of Communications. A, establishment or participation in the establishment of a company. So that's relevant because this A corresponds with clause 23.3 of our bill. B, participation in a significant partnership, trust, unincorporated joint venture or similar arrangement. Again relevant because it corresponds with clause 3.5b.4 of the bill. C, acquisition or disposal of a significant shareholding in a company. This corresponds with clause 3.5b.3 of the bill. D, acquisition or disposal of a significant asset. This corresponds with clause 3.5b.1 of the bill. E, commencement or cessation of a significant business activity. This corresponds with clause 3.5b.2 of the bill. And then lastly, F, a significant change in the nature or extent of its interest in a significant partnership, trust, unincorporated joint venture, or similar arrangement. Again, this one corresponds with clause 3.5b, Roman 4 of the bill. Chair, the references in the bill to concurrence of the Minister of Finance, we can see that it is an order to be omitted, in fact, to ensure that there is no conflict between the bill and the PFMA, because in all these clauses, it specifically says concurrence of the Minister of Finance, while in the PFMA itself, it says inform Treasury and get approval from the Minister of Communication. So there's a contradiction, and it would seem that it's actually an improvement of the bill to consider removing the concurrence issue. By way of two practical examples, then, Chair, we can actually go through, we've considered each of them, but just the two that was now mentioned. For example, clause 3.5b.1 of the bill provides that the minister must approve, or at least the old wording, the minister must approve with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance the alienation of more than 10% of the assets of the post office. That's what it boils down to. Well, section 54.2d of the PFMA says the accounting authority of the post office must inform Treasury of the transaction and submit relevant particulars of the transaction to the Minister of Communications for approval of the transaction. So it's clear that 35B1 of the bill actually contradicts 54.2D of the PFMA, and it seems in order that it be corrected. Using another example, Chair, the issue of clause 84A and government support to the post office and loans by the post office. Here again, section 66.3A of the PFMA provides how Schedule 2 public entities can borrow money. And it states that it can only happen through the accounting authority of the public entity. Furthermore, section 66.7 provides that a public entity authorized to borrow money must annually submit to the Minister of Finance a borrowing program for the year. The PFMA therefore already deals with borrowing and already involves the Minister of Finance. That will ensure that borrowing will only take place in accordance with Treasury requirements. We have in clause 84A of the bill taken borrowing a step further by also requiring approval of the Minister of Communications. It's unnecessary to specifically require approval from the Minister of Finance in the bill, especially since the PFMA already describes the role of the Minister of Finance in borrowing, and duplication again may cause conflict. So just using those two examples, Chair, it seems to us that the new proposals are not in conflict with the bill, and at least with the PFMA, and we're comfortable with it. We think, and it would seem, that the safeguards are already in place under the PFMA, and that those existing mechanisms will ensure the protection of the finances of the state. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I've heard the very eloquent description by Minister Will. Can I just say, Chairperson, firstly, a comment that this committee has engaged the department right from the word go, asking them about compliance with the proposed sections as they have put before this committee with the Public Finance Management Act. Quite frankly, I think it is disconcerting, to say the least, that only now, once the ANC study group made certain proposals, they all of a sudden believe that the new proposals actually conform better to the PFMA. I think the department owes an explanation as to why that they propose wording in an act that would now, according to Mr. Wills, be in conflict with the PFMA. So that's the first explanation. The second one that I just wanted to know, right. Chairperson, the PFMA has been in existence now for quite a number of years. How many years to be exact? About 10 years? More than that. Now, I just want to know, what is the reason that so many state-owned entities have gone into financial distress and disarray? If the PFMA was in fact implemented correctly, and secondly, that is why Parliament has a responsibility to say that if these weaknesses are clearly maybe because of a lack of understanding of the complexity of the PFMA, let us bring in additional belts and braces to make sure that when we corporatize an institution such as the post office, we're not burdening Treasury with additional unexpected expenditure, since now we intend to remove the concurrent role of the Minister of Finance. From what I've heard from the ANC and from what I've heard from the department, may I just say that the Congress of the People do not believe that it is good legislation. We want to see additional belts and braces to make sure that public entities are operated within the means so that money is not spent to bail out these institutions, whereas that those funds should actually have reached the poorest of the poor in many other ways. We are not here to feather the nests of the few, but we must make sure that these entities are giving qualitative services to the broad community, wherever they are in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much. I'm sure the OC will come in to deal with some of the issues. But look, members, I think we must accept one thing, that we've dealt with the post office bill immediately after the post bank. And it will seem that the mentality of approaching the post office bill was the same as approaching the post bank, which we know that the post bank, there was even a discussion whether we're a relevant committee to deal with, or it was supposed to go to the portfolio committee of finance. In dealing with those particular issues, we then have to tie up the two ministers, because there was also a view that actually the post bank was supposed to be the portfolio committee of finance bill, other than post communication, because of the post office nature and so on. So I think that's where the concurrence was strong, because finance still felt strong that they have to have the grip of that thing, because it's sort of a bank and other things as well. I think that's one part which we then came to the post office bill with the same approach as the post bank. But the issue is that I've just seen all the parties making the submission and also the DOC around that. But my interest, I thought that the parties also went to the white paper of 1998. Because all these things which we are talking about is there in that particular white paper. And all these issues which are raised, they are also there, and they've been given to the shareholder as a responsibility to do those things. Investment also was given to the Minister of Post, Telecommunication, and so on at that particular time. So we're dealing with an issue systematically, but I think the problem here, because we have dealt with post bank, we then moved to post office at the same approach of dealing those things. But I think DOC, I might not respond on your behalf, what honorable members ask, you must respond yourself. Why you have been saying it's fine, the concurrence today you are saying. Because in reality, what we'll seek to do, I think, in some of these clauses, that because this clause does not exempt the entities still to do what the PMA is saying. But all what you are doing is they must do that, and then after doing that, where the PMA is saying the Minister of Communication must approve those things, then we are saying concurrent. You see, that's where the problem is. Because it's like you are saying, the entity must make the minister submission, their business case, or whatever case which they want to make, and submit it to Treasury, because Treasury must approve that also. And then it goes to the Minister of Communications. And then the Minister of Communications, in doing that, must get the concurrence of finance. I think that's where the problem is. Practically, if you can take one example, how it's going to work, it seems to be a long, cumbersome process, because you must submit to the Treasury, which the Minister of Finance is the Minister of Finance. In Treasury. Then Treasury agree with the entity after they've looked whatever they've dealt with. Those things are also submitted to the Minister of Communication. And then at that point, you bring a concurrence. Like, it means the Minister of Finance has got two bites in one issue. First is at the point when the entity referred to Treasury, because it's the political head of that institution anyway. And the second part is when the Minister of Communication must approve those things, then Treasury, the Minister of Finance, come in again. So those are the issues which maybe we're dealing with this thing in a high level, practically, because I was saying, if one person can give us a practical, systematic way how this thing is going to be handled, just to see the process, how does it go and so on. So I think, as the DOC was explaining the PFMA, I don't want to respond to why they've started to raise those issues now. Is that the post office want to do something, they go to Treasury, they engage on their engagement, it must go to the Minister of Communication now to approve. whatever thing. At that level, the Minister of Finance come again, because that's what concurrency will mean. Now, the question is that what exactly are we creating around that particular issue and so on? I think that's the issue which must respond to. I also appreciate the issues raised by members about the weakness of the TFMA, but we know that it's a separate process to try and deal with new amendments and input around the PFMA and so on to strengthen that piece of legislation and so on, which if it comes to a push, you must deal with that. But I must also say it might reflect to us as the members of the committee, not necessarily to the executive, because this PFMA is also giving us a tool to monitor or to oversight the departments, then it will mean we have not been focusing to our oversight in a manner that PFMA has required us to as a committee. So now those are the issues which you need to deal with in a correct way and at the correct time and a place, so that we don't confuse issues at one point when supposed to do the other issues, we bring the other issues in and so on. But I hope that the parties after the DOC has clarified the provision of the PFMA versus the current legislation which is there, and the burden which is coming in with the concurrence and so on, will be able to move a step forward around trying to approach these issues, because indeed we don't have to create a cumbersome process which will be difficult to be implemented and the other things and so on. But DOC, you can respond to your issues, and then after you respond, I'm told that tea is ready. We can break for 10 minutes and have tea. I'm sure parties, they can chat, then we come back, then we see how to move forward. DOC?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think there are two questions raised to this segment. One by Honorable Members only, the reaction by the Finance Department on the consultation of the removal of concurrence. And the second question by Honorable Member Gillian, why DOC was quiet, only now they are responding. To be honest, Honorable Chair and Members, DOC never supported this view, never from the beginning. Honorable Chair, if you remember when this matter came forward from the committee, we raised the implications. What this committee said, if to quote, this committee says, don't get worried about the white paper. It's an apartheid law. We'll amend it. So we arrived at the situation that this committee said, after this bill has been passed, the next step is to amend the white paper. Now, on the issue of the reaction by Treasury, Honorable Zondi, I don't think we are having competency to engage Treasury as a department. These issues come from the committee, and it's a committee bill. Our engagement with Treasury was on the initial stage when this bill was conceived. Treasury was part of the process until this bill was introduced to this committee. So on the reaction by Treasury on the removal of concurrency, I don't think the department does have competence to do that, unless mandated by the committee, that can be done. But as of now, Honorable Members only, we did not consult Treasury on the removal of this concurrent, because these things come from this committee. So we have been honest engaging this committee to put Honorable Gillian Killian at comfort. Our advice has been honest advice from the beginning, when this committee said we want to put measures, as Chair said, we moved this bill after discussing and passing this post-bank bill. So our mind and spirit was quite excited on the project that we engaged on the post-bank bill. It's only of now that we're realizing that there are other measures that does not warrant us to put them here because of other mechanisms outside this bill. But as we are sitting here, Honorable Chair, our role now is that of mere secretariat. We don't do any other role except what the committee wants us to do. I'll let my colleagues add.
Thanks, Chair. Can't add much more to that except to repeat what I said, which was and duplication may cause conflicts, which is exactly what I indicated before. So it's not a fact that it will, but due to legal technicalities, a chance exists. And so you can interpret it either way. That's the bottom line. And ours, again, was just here to help ensure the integrity of the bill And that's the only reason why we are making a contribution here of issues that are actually now beyond the scope of the DOC. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Rev. Bond, Alfunitiava.
Before we go to tea, maybe it could be answered after tea. I think the purpose of this debate is that is to ensure that we can persuade one another. I'm open to persuasion, provided the answers that are given give us an assurance that what we are afraid of may not happen. What is the difference? I'm not a legal person, between concurrence with and in consultation with. Maybe that's where the we need some clarification. And the second question, how are other similar entities, state-owned companies, how are their bills framed? Are these provisions found in those entities? What has been the trend? Because that would give us comfort that we are not veering off and establishing a new trend here which is not precedented. Thanks.
DOC, you heard the question, but what we must do, members, is that maybe let us pray for tea, and then when you come back, you give the responses. But I just want person to demonstrate for us practically what does it mean. Let's talk about one issue of investment. What practically the steps are. So I think if one can demonstrate to us, maybe we can be able to understand this thing exactly, what the processes mean. Because I think the problem now is that we are dealing with this issue, but not on the practical level, what it will mean if you talk about this concurrence and so on. Maybe I'll request that when you come back, you also can respond to the question by response. But we request one person, maybe from post office or yourself, DOC, to demonstrate to us exactly the process, what does that mean, practically, where you've got the provision of the PFMA, and we want also to see the issue of concurrence sometime and so on. We can have the 10-minute break, then we'll come back to cool off. But I enjoy the debate, but this is a live committee, you see. We're alive with the possibilities of... Yes.
I'll get it, ma'am.
We're going to be interviewed. Then you need to explain.
Yeah, because I'm going to go part of the process. But I can see here. So if I start up from then, I'll come to the program.
So I'm just looking around for introduction. But I want to introduce the first thing. So what they expect to claim that the accounting authority presents to the court. That they must understand that the board is the accounting authority. And the accounting authority annually has a responsibility. And then after that, I hand it to you guys to give now the specifics of what do we do. Like annually, here, that goes to Treasury, yes. Thank you.
They give you a different perspective and you wonder what happened. Okay. Yeah, I'm just saying, I mean, you guys will just give the
Yeah, I don't think they, you know, the chair doesn't like long stories. Yeah. He just wants boom, boom, boom.
Welcome, members and our guests.
Thank you, Chair. The first issue, the clarification again of in consultation with the concurrence, those two terminologies mean the same thing. It's where a difference comes in is if you use after consultation as opposed to in consultation. Those two have different meanings, but in consultation and with the concurrence mean the same thing, being approval is required. The second matter related to trends in other SOEs, which is a more difficult question, especially because we don't have, we remember doing some of these exercises before and actually going through a number of different acts dedicated to other SOEs, but we don't have that material with us, sadly, Chair, and it's difficult to elaborate then on it. We can just go perhaps to the principle here rather, which is again that this bill was introduced without all the required concurrences of the Minister of Finance. That in itself was certified as being constitutional by the State Law Advisor at the time. That in itself, we were satisfied at the time, was not in conflict with the PFMA. So, and that's basically the position that the study group wants to revert back to at this point in time, which then corresponds with the way the bill was introduced. Just again reminding the committee that the reason it changed in the process was the influence of the post-bank bill. The matter was thoroughly deliberated on and discussed under the post-bank bill deliberations, and due to the financial implications of a bank being contemplated there, it was extremely important to ensure that all the safeguards are in place. And even though, even in the case of the post-bank bill, they were already covered in the PFMA, I think it gave comfort to everyone just to duplicate, in a sense, some of those required concurrences again, just to make sure under the post-bank bill. And we were then asked to transfer those provisions and ensure that the SAPO bill corresponds as much as possible with the post-bank bill. And as a result, those concurrences were transferred to the SAPO bill, which placed possibly a heavier onus on the post office than is required. So that in a nutshell, Chair, we'd like the post office to help us with a practical demonstration as required by you. Thank you, Chair.
Post office.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'd like to just highlight
one
two things and then ask the CEO and CFO. We won't be long, Chair, we promise. Thank you so much for this opportunity. It's always difficult when you come as a post office, like a child when your parents are talking about you and you're in the room. and you sit and you wonder at what point do I raise my voice. But thanks so much. I think the last point by us in terms of the heavy burden on us, and I think this opportunity is really appreciated by us because it gives us an opportunity to highlight some of the critical issues. As a post office, annually, I mean, first we are a Schedule 2 in terms of the PFMA, and that makes the board an accounting authority of the South African Post Office. And the clauses that were referred to by us earlier in terms of the PFMA apply, and in terms of compliance, we continue from our side to do our best to comply. So what that means is that annually, the South African Board, the South African Post Office Board presents our tables for approval to the Minister of Communications, the budget, the borrowing plans, and the capital expenditure. And that goes in the form of, you know, various corporate plan and shareholder compact, and specifically in terms of the clauses of the PFMA. And those would be tabled to the Minister of Communications, they would be tabled to the Minister of Finance, National Treasury, and then come to the Portfolio Committee on Communication when we present our budget and strategy. So that is, in terms of a mandatory annual responsibility as part of our reporting, as well as our performance as a post office. So I would like to indicate that within those, and the clarity of the PFMA, that's where we would like to appeal as a post office, the clarity of the PFMA for us at this point is sufficient to deal with this issue because we deal with it. Our concern with the concurrent as well, which we are happy that this House is dealing with today, is that in a litigious environment, in South Africa being a democratic constitution state, we always are in trouble when there are various interpretations that can get us into trouble. When we've got a piece of legislation that is very clear on a particular issue, it would be problematic to complicate it with in concurrence or concurrence and consultations that can be interpreted by various parties in different ways when we have a very clear legislation. So we would really appeal in this case because there's already practice and this would really create more problems in terms of the operations of the post office. So I really would like to appeal on behalf of the South African Post Office that, you know, we get comfort from the fact that we do have existing legislation. If there are faults, then let's focus them from an oversight perspective, but not legislate any further. And I'll ask the CEO and CFO to just highlight if there's anything I've left practically. Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, we were trying to see if we could, in fact, just quickly give an example of the issues that the Honourable Chair had raised in terms of trying to explain some of the issues that we need to go through with. If we go, I'll just take the clauses that are currently there, just the two of those that are there. For the Chair has
the chairperson of the board has sort of tried to explain that now, for example, in clause 8.3, in terms of the financial support, that will be included in our budget. In our budget, not only in terms of the PFMN, also the practice notes always issued by Treasury and updated on a regular basis, we have to ensure that we state if any borrowing plans are intended by the post office over the MTEF period. This also has to be submitted to Treasury in terms of the MTEF period that we have, and it is always evaluated through that. But this comes also from the PFMA that says we need to submit to the Minister of Communication for approval for the issues that we need to deal with. If you look at the issue of 8.4, it will also be dealt with in terms of that very same process. Let us say the post office or any of its subsidiaries will have to send an approval to the Minister of Communication for approval, as we send it also to the Minister, to the National Treasury for evaluation. And if there are any questions that will be asked from the Department of from National Treasury, it will be directed to the Post Office and it will be responded to through the Minister of Communication in terms of the issues that we need to deal with. This is further dealt with, as I explained, also in terms of money and financial support within the MTF, and we have the half-yearly reviews that will then also look at the issues that we deal with. But secondly, in terms of then, after having done that, for example, if we wanted to establish a subsidiary as a post office, we would then follow exactly the process that has been defined, do a feasibility study, present a business case to the accounting authority, which is the board. The board will then submit it to the Department of Communication, to the Minister of Communication for evaluation and approval, and it will also be sent to National Treasury for consideration and issues that are dealt with. Let us assume that in terms of the business case, it was going to be outside of the budget that had been approved in that particular year. As a post office, we would have to motivate how we are going to fund that, and it would have to go through and be agreed to by Treasury with advice to the Minister of Communication on issues that we deal with. So each and every issue that we deal with, we are guided by the PFMA. We are guided by the materiality framework that gets given, because that's one thing that I also want to add, that even the accounting authority from the Minister of Communication, as we had presented to the honorable members the last time, the governance structures that we have, is that the accounting authority does have a limit on what they can consider and approve, and therefore anything above that will then be sent to the Minister of Communication to deal with, to consider that. But there are definite exclusions, and those exclusions are the ones that I think had been highlighted earlier on by DOC in terms of the things that even if they are below the materiality, the accounting authority would still need to follow the processes that we need to go through and deal with, and that would be establishment of subsidiaries, joint ventures, as outlined in Section 54 of the PFMA. I'm not quite sure, Chair, if the Honourable Chair, if there is any other issue that you'd like us to add.
I think just lastly, Chair, to also indicate on the issue of nomination and appointment, particularly, of non-executive members. At the end of the day, it is Cabinet that, you know, after a Cabinet minister presents the name to Cabinet and they are announced by Cabinet. So it is within that, you know, the various ministers will be aware of every, and this has been practiced, I mean, for all this time, that it would be, at the end of the day, the Cabinet. So the Minister of Finance participates as part of Cabinet in the final decision of who gets appointed as a non-executive member.
Thanks very much, DOC and Post Office. Members, those are the issues around the issue of concurrency and the issue of the committee. I've got Honorable Mthambi, Honorable Killen. Yeah, Mthambi.
Thank you, Chair. I want us to move to put this issue of concurrence and consultation to vote. I'm glad the CEO tried to explain what is it all about. You see, Chair, we cannot come here and enact legislation due to the fact that certain people have failed to implement the PFMA. The PFMA indeed has been now in operation for almost 12 years. And it is very clear what needs to happen if somebody transgresses. And then I should also indicate that, like you said, it's ourselves sometimes we fail to do oversight on these other entities that have collapsed. Because the TFM is very clear, like Section 49 to 54, in the case of the post office, it talks about what the accounting authority, which is the board, what it must do. And then what we are saying in terms of this legislation, we are saying we are empowering the Minister of Communication so that with this legislation is empowered. If then he fails to deliver, Section 92 of the Constitution is very clear that the Minister is responsible for the power and functions that the executive has assigned to him. And then the Minister also has got the responsibility is accountable to Parliament for the exercise of their powers and also for the performance of their functions. So this issue to say in everything, then the minister must get concurrence of from the Minister of Finance. In other words, we are saying Treasury, go and micromanage DOC. And given the huge task that Treasury has, as we are speaking now, and then this issue, that's very clear, because I think the bottom line here is for the minister to hold whoever is accountable, same as ourselves as Parliament, we should hold the minister accountable if everything, whatever goes wrong. So I think the minister should be empowered. And what you are doing in terms of this legislation is to empower the minister to perform his duties.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make two or three remarks. First of all, I always feel uncomfortable when I know that we have a very efficient executive at the steer of a particular organization, and we're actually dealing with legislation, and we're trying to be so very, can I say, very strict about it. It's not about the current incumbents. I just wanted to say that. It is certainly not that, but obviously we are creating legislation that we believe must really comply with the constitutional provisions, with all that is expected of a parliament, etc. So I am happy that that the chairperson of the board actually made the remark. It's a beautiful description of saying that she's sitting here like a child when we are debating about it. It's a very good description. And sometimes, you know, when we were small, our parents spoke in a different language so that we didn't understand what they were talking about, and purposefully so, specifically. So I just wanted to make that point. The second point that I wanted to make was I understand that there are certain provisions in the PFMA, and I do understand also that in some cases it could create additional sort of an additional burden. But I just want us to be very mindful. When we had the presentation by South African Post Office on the budget a year ahead, the implications of the Post Bank moving out, on the operational viability of this institution, etc., makes it necessary for us, I believe, Chairperson, to also be cautious of what are we doing when we corporatize, and how are we going to make sure that this institution is actually going to be viable, to be well managed, etc., and that we don't find a repeat of some of the other state-owned entities. So I trust that that is also understood, that maybe we are too risk-averse, but it is really in an attempt to create belts and braces to make sure that when we corporatize South African Post Office, bearing in mind that the separation between the Post Bank and South African Post Office will have a financial implication, we must also make sure that we don't have a situation where
another entity is facing severe constraints and the state must bail it out. We can no longer afford that. We're already budgeting for a deficit and the state cannot be burdened with an additional unexpected financial losses of any institution. So I think that is what has driven us. So I do believe that on some of the issues of the concurrence, we could move. But in respect, personally, from the side of my party, Chairperson, I would certainly be reluctant to move on Section 3. 5, yes, there are certain provisions in the PFMA, but I believe it's just making sure that we actually putting in place the necessary belts and braces. And then the last issue, and I want to also come in on that, is what Reverend Zondi has asked is very pertinent. And the response was that, and it's also understood that the department says no, it's now the committee dealing with it. So far, the consultation was with Treasury, bearing in mind that there was adequate concurrence for the Minister of Finance. Now we're taking it out. I believe it would be responsible for our committee to say to the Minister of Finance, to the Treasury, this is what we intend to do. Would you have a problem with that? Because we do not want to have another state-owned entity that is facing serious problems in time to come, maybe under new management, whatever. I believe that is just the responsible thing to do. So from us, from COPE, we believe that we could move on some of the clauses, but in respect of some of the others, and I want to come back to the issue of the appointment. I have heard what the chairperson has said, but for us as Parliament, we must make sure that we have transparent processes, that we do not give unfettered power to the executive, because then we actually would not act in accordance with the Constitution that is providing for a very close scrutiny role of Parliament over the executive. If we say the minister has the sole authority to appoint from our organization, from COPE, we would certainly not support that, because then we should rather have a situation that we're asking the minister, if he does not want to appoint a committee to do the appointment, on why does he not want to have a committee to appoint. It must be a transparent process. We're talking about a state-owned entity. Government has 100% of the share. We owe it to South Africans to know who will be at the steer of this very important entity. And how do we ensure that it is really representative of the full nation and not only of a few who happens to be in close association with the relevant minister at a particular time. So we would certainly not support that from our side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Killer. There's no other hand. Members, I'm sure we've been dealing with these issues for some time. The only new proposal which is coming in is around the appointment of the committee, which must do the necessary process of recommending to the minister to appoint the board members. But the submission is that currently it's the May, and the core proposal is that if the minister does not appoint the committee, must explain why it's not feasible to appoint the committee, wants to appoint directly without the committee. That is the issue. Maybe I think the ANC must be able to talk to, because I think it's something which is coming up. It's a new issue. I see Honourable Michael hand is up. You can come.
Chair, I'm sorry. It seems to have become a bit of a two-way conversation. But from the DA side, the committee is not a may. It is a must. Just so that you know that from our side, we are not happy at all with the idea of this committee not being there. We would be failing the people of our country in our oversight role if we allowed something like this to go through. One must understand that when you deal with this, you have to take personalities out of the picture, and no one at all is saying anything towards the integrity of the minister. But we are simply saying that it is an issue of transparency and accountability towards South Africans, that the minister should not hold this kind of power and not hold this kind of centralization of power with regards to issues like this. And therefore, for us, it is not a question of whether the committee should exist or not. The committee is an absolute must.
Thank you, Honourable Member. That is the issue that currently the proposal from the ANC is made. Originally, it was must. COPE was coming up to say there should be some reason why the committee is not appointed. If it's not appointed, it can be a open thing that the minister can so wish to appoint or not to appoint, which means it means that they are, in a sense, saying if it's not appointed, there should be reasons. DA is saying the committee, ANC may. So those are the issues around the issue of the committee. I think on the issue of the concurrence, we have dealt with the matters and the issues are coming and so on. I don't think that there's not any more motivation from either party on the concurrent issues, which will can supersede your PFMA and the other issues which people have already advanced and so on. But the area which we have not exploited much was the issue of the appointment of the committee itself. If we can just deal with that one, then so that at least we know that we are making progress or not around that issue. ANC, that's the matter which is coming.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let me start by saying I think, Chair, I hear what our colleagues are saying. And I think, Chairperson, I don't know, with your permission, because it's something that has been proposed by our colleagues now. And I know as the ANC, I want to use my power and authority, being a member of parliament, to request, but I don't know the agency of this, maybe to look at it and give it some thought. As the ANC, with your permission.
No, members, I think the intention here is as far as possible to reach consensus around the finalization of this thing. I would think that it will be fair if the ANC wants to go and consider the issue of their committee. Be given that opportunity to do so, because the proposal has come out. I would think that the ANC also, as much as they want to convince other people or influence others, they should be open to influence also from others and so on. So I think that's the matter which maybe, unless the committee feels otherwise, to allow them to have that consultation time. What we can do is that we can place the matter for 30 minutes or so Friday before we take the DOC strategic plan. That they come back and report and see how far are they going around that particular issue and so on. I can see DOC, they got a problem of the up and down. I would think that DOC, we have given quite a number of clarities around this particular matter and so on. If you are there, we'll appreciate. But I think that some of the issues, they need the political parties themselves to engage and agree on and so on. So, but I hope if there is, we can be able to come back Friday to ask about the finalization of that matter, because we must finalize the issues. Honorable Michael.
Chairperson, with all respect, we have now approved a program going forward. Certain of us have got commitments and will be sending alternates, because specifically it was understood that this act would be dealt with today. Chair, I think that in light of discussions that have taken place today, and in light of the fact that it looks like at this stage we are not finding each other on this, it would be my humble recommendation that we go back, we speak to our specific party structures, and Chair, instead of bringing it back on Friday, when certain of us that have been very instrumental in this bill will not be here, rather discuss it at the first possible chance after we come back from our break from the election. Chair, I don't think that this is something that should in any way be rushed, and I'm quite sure that my colleagues agree that this is far too important to rush it. I would not want to send someone as an alternate to this committee who does not have the full background. I don't think it would be respectful to this committee. So, Chair, I implore you to please allow us a little bit more time, because even from my side, I've taken aboard comments made by my colleagues, by the DOC, and I would like to discuss these issues in full with certain of my colleagues too. So a little bit more time, Chair, would be very much appreciated.
So you propose that we deal with when we come back after the election to finalize the deal, in essence. ANC?
Thanks, Chair. I think we will come back.
So we will come back to the issue of the deal after we came back after election to come and deal with. I hope that this time parties will seriously consider the issue. Because you see, when we come back, all what I'm going to put before you are the clauses and a vote. If you don't agree, we vote, we move. There will be no more other discussion as we've been. I think we've discussed fair enough. When we come back, we put the clauses one by one. 3.5, agreed, no, and so on. But no, thanks very much, honorable members. I hope we'll have more time to consult around these issues and find each other, so that when we come back, it also becomes an easy thing. Who knows, at that time, maybe the new Kamban Act will be in action. By that time, and so on. It might solve some of our problems. Members, we are done with the business of today, except to remind members that our budget debate is 31st and also the 1st of June, and we are retaking DOC Friday. The problem is that we are also being pressured to go to the budget debate extended committees. So you will see that next week what we have done. We wanted to use the Tuesday and the Wednesday so that we finalize everything, which is still within us. And then we also deal with the adoption of the report with the other days which are remaining. And then we are able to be ready to debate, to engage on our debate 31st and the 1st. I'm told that the cluster which you are belonging at now, economic development, is sitting, so members are urged that after from here, you must go to your relevant cluster. They are waiting for us there because they know that we are here to be dealing with the important issues, but they want us to join the other important issues. Thanks very much, members, who will be there Friday. Those members who are not going to be available Friday, I think the EDA, Honorable Michael, has made a very important point. The issue of trying to send alternate so that we still continue with the decorum of the committee and the integrity of the committee so that members are also here and so on. Thanks very much, members, for your cooperation and everything. We'll meet Friday when we deal with DOC, strategic plan and budget. Thank you.
So we are done, right? Yeah, now what's one? So how about that?